Hello, and welcome back to the GamecockScoop.com podcast, the official podcast of GamecockScoop.com on Rivals. I'm Caleb, and I'm joined by a road-wearied Alan. How was your last month?
I have slept in my own bed, I think, two nights in a row at max the last month, I think. Wow.
It's, hey, exciting life, though. Actually, that's kind of maybe where I wanted to start. And then we'll get into some more of the game details, but women's basketball obviously completes their perfect season, only the 10th perfect season in women's basketball history. We kind of talked, I guess, before this week that it's kind of ironic that the team that we had the lower expectations for is the one that actually completes it compared to the one that had, you know, the 4 years in a row sort of momentum of last year's team. We'll kind of after this, I guess, look ahead to who might be back next year and, you know, what sort of run that this group could potentially go on. But anyway, the place I wanted to start is this like media environment that you saw throughout this women's basketball tournament. We saw that the game on a Sunday afternoon, by the way, not like Sunday evening, not a normal championship time, I would think. Game on a Sunday afternoon between Iowa and South Carolina gets the biggest rating. I think it was 18.1 million or something like that.
Peaked at 24 million.
8 to 24 million, even bigger. Gets the biggest rating of any basketball game. That's NBA, men's basketball, whatever, since 2019, which I thought was pretty crazy, pretty remarkable, and pretty cool for the sport. Did your experience in person over the last few weeks kind of reflect this, fervor, this explosion of the sport that seems to be happening?
Yeah, it really did. Just, I don't think I went anywhere in Cleveland last weekend where somebody wasn't talking about it, where somebody wasn't wearing gear, whether that's South Carolina or one of the other three teams that were there or the teams. And I don't think I went anywhere in Albany where it wasn't being talked about. I remember I was in a Dunkin' Donuts in Albany the morning after South Carolina advanced, when there was still the other bracket there. And the person giving me the coffee was talking about Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and what that leather game in Albany was going to be. It's just, it really did feel like get to everywhere you go, everywhere you talk about. I mean, it's been that way in Columbia for a while, but it was cool to go to a place I'd never been before to hear that, to see that. I remember on my flight back from Albany, it was during that LSU-Iowa game, and everywhere you looked, there was someone on their little plane TV watching the game, myself included. It was really cool, and it, I don't want to say felt right, but it felt like maybe storybook that one of the teams that's been a part of this, that's been a, I'm going to use the word dynasty now, I know we're going to talk about it later, been a part of this kind of growth the last 5-6 years, ended up winning it on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. I thought that it was really telling that on Saturday, and you tweeted about this, and then I saw a couple of other people kind of talking about it, but Saturday there was just like a shoot around practice session or whatever, and they had to overflow into the upper deck.
Yep.
And that's, yeah, people from out of town coming in to watch too, right? Not at a home shooter.
No, it's a lot of South Carolina fans, a lot of Iowa fans. And like you said, that was a open practice, 1 hour for each team. Nobody's running plays or doing anything important with fans watching. It was just, like you said, a shoot-around basically. And it was packed.
That's wild. All right, so you use the word dynasty. I agree. But I also think, and this kind of ties back into the popularity question, and maybe a bigger question is, where does this season rank in the history of women's college basketball? Because most of that other top 10 is populated by UConn teams. Obviously, there was a dynasty run. What was it, 2015 to 18 or so?
I think it was 13 to 16. They won four in a row.
Okay. And to me, and maybe this is just me being a product of the moment or whatever, to me, this season might have been at least on par with any of those seasons, obviously statistically. But also, I think that there's an argument to be made that the path has gotten harder since that 4 year stretch that we're talking about for Connecticut and the other, what was it, 2007 to 10 or something like that, stretch that they had. Do you agree that, I guess, the women's basketball world has a little bit more parity than it did back then?
Yeah, I think for sure path harder. I think you just watch the games you watched, you know, once you clear the first weekend, Indiana's a 4-point game. Oregon State's been a really good program for a while. They've been to a Final Four. You have that in the Elite Eight now. What you run into with NC State in the semifinal, obviously Iowa on Sunday. Path harder, yes. And I think certainly when you talk about impressive, it's been said a lot. I've written it a lot. I think we've all said it but since now in, you know, November. They lost all five starters plus two bench players off last year's team. That's seven players on your roster. The number one overall pick in the WNBA draft is gone. There was, let's see, Bree Beal got drafted, LA got drafted, Zyko. It's four WNBA, five, Saxton. You lost five WNBA draft picks, plus the number one overall off last year's team. Replaced them with a big portal ad in Pau Pau, two true freshmen, and a whole bunch of players who had been around but hadn't played a lot, and they step up and put together a 38-0 season, which is just remarkable.
Yeah, and since we last spoke, Don Staley won the Naismith Coach of the Year Award, deservedly so, and I think a lot of it hinges on what you just said, like probably your most impressive coaching job.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah. So I think, obviously, we'll need to, like, let it simmer a little bit, also see what else this team does in the future, but historically, it just feels a little bit different maybe than those Connecticut runs, but also maybe because I wasn't following it as closely at that time too. I don't know. Me and everyone else though, right? Like, there's just so much more attention on every aspect of it at this point. And yeah, I think the tournament was a lot more fun than I remember those being, in the sense of there's several years where they really didn't have any competition at all.
South Carolina was the best team and just went wire to wire. But you could have easily talked yourself into several other teams winning the national title. I mean, a three seed won the title last year. Most of those UConn years, there were maybe one other team that could have pushed them, or two at the most. But yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there were some close calls throughout the season, dating all the way back to the very first month of the season. You know, you think back to that last second shot against Tennessee, which could have derailed it. There was all these moments throughout the time that wouldn't have necessarily kept you from winning national championship, but would have kept you from doing it with a perfect record as well. Let's get to the game itself a little bit, because this wasn't one that was, you know, known how it was going to play out until late in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was a pretty wire to wire good game. Kind of runs back and forth. So Iowa starts with was it 10-0, 12-0?
10-0, and then it got to 13-2 was the largest lead Iowa took.
Yeah, and I think they had another 11-point lead later. Caitlin Clark scores 18 points in the first quarter, and you're kind of like, ooh. Like, you got their best punch for sure coming right out of the gate. And I thought it was really impressive how South Carolina took that punch. Really by the end of the quarter had already started to settle things down. And then of course you take the lead into halftime off of a really impressive play by Raven Johnson, where she met Caitlin Clark, like right past half court, steals the ball and scores on the other end. And I was texting you before this, but that kind of felt like a microcosm of the night. Raven Johnson played a great defensive game against Caitlin Clark. And once they figured her out, it felt like she just didn't quite have the legs to make it through all four quarters, I guess. Obviously, she still scored 30 points, was still very impressive. But, I mean, 18 points in the first quarter, 12 points over the final three quarters. You'll take that, just based on the way that the game went. What are your, I guess, overall takeaways from that game? Some other key moments maybe I didn't hit on?
Yeah, that is where I wanted to start. Because you talk about, like, calling a shot and just saying what you're going to do and doing it. I remember press conference number one this year, like the open practice they do in September, like it was like 6 weeks before they went to Paris. Raven Johnson told us, this is the revenge season. Iowa got us last year. We're getting them, not in those exact words, but she used the word revenge tour in practice number one this year in September. And she did it. She did everything she said she was going to do, became a better shooter this year, better defender this year, met the Caitlin challenge head on Sunday. I know she wasn't the only one who guarded her. Bree Hall took a couple shifts. Tessa Johnson took a couple shifts. But Raven Johnson met the moment Sunday. I can't remember who said it to me now. Someone called it the best 1-for-11 shooting game in basketball history. to me Sunday. So I wanted to start there. And then also, you talk about that first quarter. I don't have one play in mind, but you're down. You need some energy. Malaysia Fulwiley comes in and changes that game immediately. I mean, it was pretty clear within, I think, her first two possessions. She took a drive to the bucket and scored. And then she went in and got an assist. I can't remember which big scored it, but it was pretty clear almost immediately that Iowa didn't have a guard who could stay in front of her. And once Fulwiley started pushing the tempo, dropping the ball off to the bigs, I think I knew by about the middle of the second quarter that Iowa wasn't going to stop them, that South Carolina would score in the 80s in this game. It was just a question of if Iowa's offense could keep up, and slowly but surely, with a lot to do with Raven Johnson, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I remember as far back as last year when we were talking about the loss to Iowa, and what had to happen this offseason to not let it happen again. Malaysia Fulwiley was one of the first names we mentioned. She was already committed to South Carolina at that point. And we talked about her explosiveness and how, you know, South Carolina last year just didn't have the offensive counterpunch to withstand Caitlin Clark scoring 30 points or 41 points like she scored last year. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. That was a key moment. She came in, she was a spark. I think the play you were talking about, she dished it off to Sania Fagan. She also knocked down a three in that stretch. Yeah, really just kind of took over and single-handedly got South Carolina back in it. And then, you know, you were kind of able to hold serve until the end of the second quarter when you finally pushed it over the edge.
Yeah.
Didn't really look back after that point, although...
Also, speaking of freshman guards, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Tessa Johnson scoring her career high in the national championship game.
Pretty good timing there, yeah.
Yeah, just a really an unbelievable tournament for Tessa Johnson altogether. A couple huge plays in that Elite Eight game down the stretch when it was still close. I think she hit three threes in a row at one point in the second round game. That's she has not been talked about enough as she should. I think the obvious reason is that the other freshman guard in her class is Malaysia Fulwiley, and I understand that. But Tessa Johnson had an incredible season, an incredible tournament, and an incredible national championship game. And I feel like that was worth mentioning. I didn't do it the first time.
Definitely. And here's the other stat that I think kind of sticks with you after this. 51 rebounds to 29 rebounds, South Carolina over Iowa. And then specifically offensive rebounds, 18 offensive rebounds to 7 offensive rebounds for South Carolina. And yeah, I mean, you saw it throughout the time. The second chance points, I think, made a huge difference here. Cardoso was cleaning up a lot of those and putting them back up. Fagan had a couple herself. I mean, really nice game.
Chloe Kitts very quietly had a double-double. Yeah. I didn't really realize that until I looked up at the end of the box score, but 16 and 10.
Yeah, that's true. She did show up throughout as well. So now the question, I think, becomes, I mean, we just mentioned two freshmen. Like, how, like, what's next, I guess? Like, how can this... how do you one-up this? Can you one-up this? I did see that Tessa Johnson missed the championship ceremony yesterday. Have you heard anything on that? Or
no, but I wouldn't assume there's anything to that. I think that's there's nothing there. There's everything a parade on I Sunday. Was, I would expect like her to maybe, be there.
I just said everything I've heard was maybe just like a family thing. So yeah, like you said, we'll find out on Sunday if there's anything.
Yeah. And then just you start looking ahead at next year. You're losing Cardoso. That's going to hurt. The throw the ball to a 6'7 player and let her score play is not in your playbook next year. You can do that with 6'4 and 6'5, but it's not 6'7. Yeah. Really, other than that, Sakima Walker, who was the 10th player this year, and I think did have a role on this team. I wrote a little bit about her leadership kind of without playing on Sunday, Saturday. She has a decision to make. She has one more year of eligibility. That's not a WNBA prospect. She might want to go somewhere else to play. She might be comfortable in her role here. I asked her after the game Sunday. She said she still hadn't decided yet. So Cardoso's gone. Walker might be. Everyone else is back. And then you're adding in Adele Tack, who is coming off a major knee injury, but is 6'5", is some of that size you need. When she gets healthy, I think that's a strong contender to help this team next year. Obviously, Joyce Edwards, the number two recruit in the country from Camden, South Carolina, is coming in. And then Maddie McDaniel, who's a guard, who is the Gatorade Player of the Year in Maryland, is your third member of that recruiting class coming in.
Yeah, And like you said, number two recruiting class right now in the country. So, you know, very much in reloading mode. Interesting to see what'll happen in the portal. You got a Haley Van Lith out there, you know?
I think you just need one big, honestly. Dawn's been very selective. She got two players last year, Powell and Walker, just one the year before, Kiera Fletcher. I think you need one more back-to-basket big. You got a roster full of fours right now. Watkins, Fagan, Kitts, Edwards to a degree. They all play the four. You don't have that true five. So if you can find one of those, someone that's a little bit more of the pure post-up, back-to-basket, rim protection, I think they will. You've got three scholarships open right now, or four if Walker leaves. So I don't think they're going to fill the roster. I don't expect them to just jump on three in the portal. There's not enough minutes for everybody, but I would expect probably one big to come in the portal, and then plus those three recruits and the eight or nine players coming back pending Sakima Walker rounds out your roster next year.
Yeah. And you won't have to deal with a Caitlin Clark-led Iowa next year.
No, you will not.
although, obviously, there's still some Paige Beckers. Is she supposed to be back?
Yep, she'll be back next year. I think UConn's probably number one or two, or probably number two in the preseason poll if you start setting it up this early behind South Carolina.
Yeah, and they came on very strong throughout the year. So, you know, I think there are definitely plenty of obstacles in the way of continuing the dynasty, but I do think it's probably safe to call it a dynasty at this point.
Yeah.
Three national championships, you know, multiple MVPs and WNBA drafted stars and coaches of the years and banners, and what was that, the 11th or 12th net that she's cut down?
16 nets. You're at three national titles, six final, I can do math, three national titles, six final fours, seven SEC tournaments.
Yeah, I think it's safe to call it.
Yeah.
And yeah, the question I guess now is the goal to just like become the best dynasty in women's basketball history? That'll be tough.
I mean, you're going to need another eight titles to catch UConn. That feels like a lot, but I'm not going to put anything past Dawn Staley.
I mean, yeah, she's young enough to do it if she has that as a goal. Does she have other goals?
I don't think you're ever getting to a point again in women's basketball where the same team's winning four in a row. And this is what I will give UConn credit for, is a lot of schools, South Carolina included, up their investment, their facilities, their resources is in an effort to catch UConn. And now there's just too many schools who also invest in it and care about it. And South Carolina is up there for sure still. I don't want to act like they're a poor program, but I think the idea of winning like four in a row, or I don't know what UConn ended up getting to. Was it 7 out of 10 or something at one point? I don't know if that's happening again, but there's no reason to think it's going to stop at three. Like, it'd probably get another one eventually.
Yeah. I mean, the UConn ones, you got to kind of almost put them in a different category, the same way you put like the John Wooten UCLA
men's teams. Yeah.
It was like they were just so far ahead of the curve. But I do think the curve has caught up, and that's why I do think that this undefeated season will stand the test of time, because I think it's going to be very, very difficult to come by an undefeated season in women's basketball as we go forward.
I agree. And that's kind of what makes this even crazier. And like I said, they had a few pushes, the Tennessee game in Greenville for sure, the game in Baton Rouge with Ty with under a minute to go. But really, I think it ended up being four single-digit games, maybe five the whole year. Like, it would, this sounds so stupid because they're all really impressive, but as undefeated seasons go, that's about as impressively as you can do it. And again, after losing five starters, that is astronomical.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely exceeded all of our expectations we had preseason. Not that we didn't think that they were going to be good, but certainly didn't have this in mind. Any other just like final thoughts on the women's basketball national championship, the season at large, before we move into some football?
I think that's it. I'm just saying, stick a Gamecock scoop, have some more stuff coming out of it, some stories. The parade's on Sunday if you're in Columbia. I think they've put out information for it on the website, but if not, they will in the coming days. So if you're around Sunday and you want to go parade again, jump in a fountain, I don't know, climb a light pole. I don't know. I'm not advocating any of this stuff, but it's all stuff I saw videos of Sunday. So it's a pretty happy campus right now. Just walking around a little bit today, driving around, going to football availability.
The fountain shot that I saw looked really, really cool.
Yeah.
And if you go to GamecockScoop.com right now and go back to 2 days ago, there is a 2023-24 South Carolina women's basketball season in stories. article that Alan posted that's got all of his stories from throughout the year. So if you just are feeling in a reflective mood and want to like look back at the season that was and some of the players that you know, created this sort of magic season, that's a good place to start.
It's a landing page. It's got about 20 links there. Some good stuff there.
Yeah. And I can, if you go to our Twitter, you can see it too. I'll put it in the show notes for those of you listening later. Anyway, let's talk a little football. It's spring. I know that you went to a press conference this morning. Before we get into that, I did just want to hit the big news of the day, which is that South Carolina landed their second 2025 football commitment, and it's another wide receiver. It's wide receiver Brian Rowe. He's rated a 3-star on Rivals, 14th in the state of North Carolina. He's out of Robinson High School in Concord, North Carolina. Really broke out last year, so it wouldn't surprise me if he has another big senior season, if that star ranking goes up, because he really broke out as a junior. So had over 1,000 yards and 15 touchdowns last year as a junior. And yeah, met with Mike Furry today. That would be the first wide receiver that's committed since Mike Furry took over that wide receiver coach role. And yeah, I mean, that's, you know, maybe not quite as flashy of a name as you're hoping for at this point, but it's an important name. And again, I haven't really had a ton of time to break down the film yet. We'll have some film study on GamecockScoop.com in the coming days. So I'm interested to see kind of what his game's like, but the stats kind of speak for themselves there, I think. And also I think it's important because you have had some trouble recruiting in the state of North Carolina over the last few years. The in-state schools have really ramped up their game. If you look back at like the successful teams of the Spurrier era, they were populated by a lot of North Carolina names. And I do think it's important to get some inroads back into that state if you're going to reach the heights that you want to. Obviously, you've opened up some other pipelines that you didn't have during that era, like the DMV or whatever, but I'm always good to get one from your northern neighbor. All right. So yeah, spring practice. The first scrimmage of the spring was this past Saturday. They'll have one more next Saturday.
Yeah.
And then the spring game, obviously, on the 20th. What can you tell me about the first scrimmage?
Yep. So this scrimmage last Saturday at Williams-Brice Stadium, Beamer said it was kind of a hybrid scrimmage. They ran about 60 plays of like actual 11-on-11 and also did some 7-on-7 work. I'm not going to give away everything. I wrote on GameCockScoop.com today if you're subscribed about it. But a couple of things you guys might find interesting if you're listening. Quarterbacks were live for some of that. Not the whole thing, but some. Apparently, Sellers, Ashford, Reno, and Bevel all got hit a little bit, which Beamer wanted to happen. He did mention one big play by Lenore Sellers on a scramble. So that's, you know, protecting, getting out of a sack and running for a little bit there. He said no turnovers for the offense, although Judge Collier did force a fumble that Mazio Bennett fell back on top of. So that kind of stood out to me that you ran 60 plays and nobody turned it over. And yeah, he said that the running game, even though they don't have Rocket, they don't have Bradley Dunn, they don't have Duji McDowell, was still, they were able to do what they wanted to accomplish there with Jawaan Howell, Oscar Attaway, and DJ Braswell.
Yeah, another, I guess, quarterback note that stood out to me was the specific call out of Dante Reno, and said he had a nice week since we last spoke at the end of last week, and then had a good scrimmage. So
yep.
Always good when your freshman is, you know, flashing this early. Obviously, we're not expecting him to, you know, take the starting job or anything, but you'd like to feel confident having him in there. So yeah, other spring notes, I guess.
Some injuries today. We need to run through those.
Yeah,
nothing major, nothing long term. But Beamer said JT Gear, Nicky Minwuri, DeBron Gatling, Brady Hunt, and David Spaulding got banged up at some point in the last week. We don't know if that was in the scrimmage or in a practice, but they did not practice today. He said none of those are long term.
Great. The only other recruiting note I have for you is Ryan Montgomery and the saga that continues there. I will have a couple more insider notes on this later in the week on the weekly recruiting wrap-up on GamecockScoop.com. But one thing to kind of look at is Georgia was in the running for Zoller It's another four-star 2025 quarterback that ended up at Missouri last week. So, or he ended up committing to Missouri last week. They're still trying to flip the kid from Southern Cal, whose name escapes me right now, Georgia is. But we've kind of talked about just like South Carolina and Florida have prioritized Ryan Montgomery so much throughout this process, but like Georgia is Georgia. So it's, if they do, you know, turn their full attention to him, that'll be something to look out for, but I still feel all right about where you're at. It wouldn't, the latest that I've heard about commitment timeline is like early May, and then a official visit to whoever he commits to help recruiting in the summer. So just something to look forward to there. Yeah, I think that's all the football notes I have right now. We'll have a lot more.
Jackson Hughes hit the portal, walk-on offensive lineman who was depth last year. Beamer just said he wanted to go somewhere he could try to get a scholarship with his last year of eligibility.
Yeah, I mean, you look at offensive line, you look at the interior defensive line, those are pretty crowded rooms at the moment. We expect that a couple of transfer portal, you know, additions will happen right after the spring game.
The portal opens Monday. Next Tuesday, I think. Forgot to mention that.
But as far as I've heard so far, no one that you would expect to contribute like on the immediate 2-deep is populating those lists at the moment. But, you know, it's the portal. Weird things
happen. Talk a little baseball before we get out of here?
Do we have to?
We'll make it quick.
No, I'm kidding. South Carolina had a pretty rough week since we last spoke. Coming off of another rough week before that. Can we go back to just talking about the Vandy win? That sounds more fun. They lost their first midweek of the year.
Yep. Eddie Pomper got hurt.
That was last weekend again, or last Wednesday against
Georgia Southern.
Oh my gosh. You're right. Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern was coming off of a double-digit loss to College of Charleston the night before, and then they shut out South Carolina in a game that really wasn't very competitive. The highlight for Georgia Southern there offensively was a grand slam, and I want to say the second or third inning, and then they just were lights out in their bullpen after that. And then South Carolina hosted the number three team in the country, Texas A&M, and Texas A&M very much looked like the number three team in the country pretty much all weekend, I thought. South Carolina did steal one on Sunday, although they tried their best to not steal it. We were talking before this, but they had an opportunity in the seventh and eighth inning, both with the bases loaded and no outs, clinging to like a two-run lead at that point, and I think they got one run out of both of those opportunities. Yeah. So luckily, Garrett Gainey earns a save, shuts the door in the ninth inning. You get a one-run win, I believe. Was it one or two? Whatever. It was too close. It was closer than it needed to be is kind of my point. You had two opportunities to have some clutch hitting to really like throw the knockout punch, and you didn't. You still win the game, and it's, I guess it's hard to be overly critical about a win against the number three team in the country or whatever, but it's just like so indicative of who this team has been all year, I think, that it fits right into that narrative.
Does it not? Okay, let's big picture here. You're 6-6 in the league after four weekends. You've got six series to go. That Vandy sweep is kind of keeping you afloat right now because you've lost your other three series plus your Clemson series. Does it not feel like the wheels are about to come off here? You're going to Gainesville this weekend. You've got number one Arkansas coming the weekend after that. Kentucky's playing really well right now. I think they're 11-1 in the league. The weekend after, does it not feel like the wheels are just about to come off here? Like, what's stopping the skid right now, I guess, is my question. You haven't been swept yet in SEC play. You've managed to salvage a Sunday game against Ole Miss, Alabama, and A&M, but you haven't won a series other than Vanderbilt, and you got to go back on the road this weekend. Like, is this not where the bottom falls out?
Yeah, so to use a metaphor, I guess, it feels like you're about to get like skunked in ping pong or something, but you keep getting just that one more point to keep it within a range, to keep the thing going. That's the way it's felt for the last, really since the Vandy series. You can't fully bury them because there's still this idea that you could loop together a couple of series in a row and be right back in it. I just don't know that they've shown anything to give you any confidence that that's going to happen, other than the Vandy series.
And they definitely have it on the road, which you're going to have to figure out this weekend in Gainesville.
Yeah, the road series have been really rough. You would think both Ole Miss and
Alabama,
who was 2 weeks ago, Bama, are slightly inferior opponents lineup-wise, or inferior to what you think you should be. Really didn't give yourself a chance in either of them. And I've been hammering it all year. It's hitting with runners and scoring position. Yeah. That's the one stat that they have. They have to be in the bottom half of the country, really, there. I mean, the walks are keeping them alive offensively. Some pretty solid pitching, although the bullpen has given a couple away here lately as well. But the clutch hitting has just been atrocious all year.
Yeah, it feels like things are kind of on the skids here. And again, they're 6-6 in the league. I don't want to act like they're in a do or die win tomorrow where the season's over kind of situation. But you wonder what's going to turn it around, and you don't really have an obvious answer, I guess, is my thing. And you kind of just sitting around waiting for someone to kind of go insane. Like you're waiting for a pitcher to throw a shutout, or like one batter to hit three homers, and like someone to do something individually to spark this team. You're just kind of waiting for that right now, I feel like.
Yeah, you could get a little RPI boost tonight.
Tonight, UNC. Good point.
So you're playing UNC in Charlotte, number 13 team in the country. Like you said, your normal midweek starter or someone that had kind of been trending that way, Eddie Copper, will not be pitching tonight, right?
No, he's hurt. I got hurt against Georgia Southern. They're going to Dylan Eskew tonight. Becker started Sunday? And they moved Pitzer to – yeah, so you've got – he had Matthew nice Becker in the weekend rotation. Now, Eskew's been struggling. I can understand moving him to midweeks. Although, again, tonight you're not facing a normal midweek opponent.
Yeah. No, it's a sort of crucial game. I mean, and then, like you said, you travel to Florida this weekend. That's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that's about just where to leave it. We'll see.
I mean, the thing is, you can't bury them yet. If they came away with 2 of 3 this weekend, everything sort of feels like it's back on track. But for some reason, the vibes just feel really, really
bad. The vibes are terrible. Yeah. The vibes are bad right now.
We will have full coverage of that all weekend on GamecockScoop.com. We will be talking a lot more football going forward as the basketball seasons have wrapped up. Recruiting is in full swing. So every week from here on out, plenty of recruiting news on the site as well. We'll be back here next week for the GamecockScoop.com podcast. In the meantime, we'll see you.